At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu. To the old me, scared and unseen, you're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes and the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is the voice I found. For those who lost their voice, I sing it loud. I keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place. It's a call to every soul who wants to be free. A song for
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, everybody, I'm Naomi Ekperrigan.
And I'm Andy Beckerman.
We're a real-life couple and a real-life couple of comedians. And we're the hosts of the podcast Couples Therapy.
We're the only comedy relationship podcast ever. Yeah, I said it. And we're so good, we've been written up in both the New York Times and we made Grindr's list of top podcasts.
Yes, we're giving you that high-low appeal. Trust. On the show, we talk to guests like Bob the Drag Queen, Angelica Ross,
Bowen Yang, Janelle James, Danny Pudi, Darcy Carden, Paul F. Tompkins,
and more. All about love, mental health, and everything in between. And we answer your relationship questions. We are two unlicensed comedians just trying to help you out.
So open your hearts, loosen your butts, because we got a lot of laughs
and a lot of real talk just for you.
Download Couples Therapy wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
This is Edna White. I am your host today, and I am so excited on this part of the author section to have someone here with my favorite word, okay? I love pause. If anybody knows me, I pause for everything and think it through. But this is the practice of the pause, and our esteemed guest today is Kim Groshek. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Awesome.
I know. So, I'm excited to get into this. So I'm ready to get into it. How do you show up in the world?
How do I show up in the world? Well, I show up very different today than I did over 35 years ago, right? Hence the pause. Yeah. So, well, you know, I have always been a very driven person, very driven. And I started my own company in 2000. So that's about, what is it? Over two decades ago, right? And while I was actually doing that, I actually transitioned into becoming this expert, or people would call me to help fix their companies. It just kind of happened. It wasn't like I went to school for it. I just, you know, got a knack for it. So if you haven't heard of Realtor.com, I actually was the person who actually built that. So I worked with startups. I'd worked with banks, with mergers and acquisitions. If a company was failing, it was broken, they call me in to say, hey, can you fix this? I'd work for 2 years building teams, building structures and frameworks and you name it, right? But there was a time, and of course I was going to school at the same time and all that stuff. So like driven, right? I was running half marathons and marathons and doing all this crazy stuff. And I realized at a point in my life that I was just getting way exhausted. And I discovered this by taking a pause. And this was in 2009. Now, at that time, I didn't really relate pause with anything. I just, you know, started taking yoga, and I realized how important it was to just take a breath and actually be mindful. Because what I found out was I was not really living in the moment. And my daughter already, you know, she actually was, you know, a grown up. She was in college. Wow. And I said, you know what? And I look back and I was like, almost like, here I am. Did I raise my daughter right? All these things kind of came up, like, you know, she was doing fine. It's just that in my head, you know, I had these things like, oh my goodness, I was so driven, right? And where did that all come from? Well, I realized at that moment, there was a time in my life that actually in my childhood, that actually was a pivotal time that actually switched and altered how I was to make me kind of that driven, try to be really successful, keep going. And in that, what it was, I was actually in seventh grade and I was a cheerleader at the time. And back then, you know, being a cheerleader was a big deal. I was going to parochial school and there weren't many people in the school. You try out and it was a big deal, right? If you make it. And I made cheerleading.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then in eighth, well, at the end of the year, I had a really smart class, right? And there was one person in my class who did like this experiment. Like she was already like the psychologist in seventh grade. It was just crazy. And she decided I was really into like being popular for some reason. It was like this thing. And she decided one day to get the whole class to not talk to me, to see what would happen, because she knew how important that was in my heart. It was just such a sad thing, but it was what, you know, we kids are mean, right? They don't realize what they're doing to the other person.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was like sitting there going, okay, well, if they're not going to talk to me, I'm going to go and talk to these kids that no one talks to and hang out with them. You know, I like everyone, you know, it's not going to phase me. And so, you know, then summer came and went, and then eighth grade came along. And it was time to go try out for cheerleading. Now, here's the big deal. I tried out I did my tryout, right? And we had this cheerleading coach who was a cheerleading coach the year before. She's the adult. I'm the child, right? Still in eighth grade. And she pulled in one of my classmates, a different one this time, who I actually was all about wanting to be friends with, right? And I don't know what happened, but I'm making up a story, right? But in my head, I made up the story that she called her up and said, you know, is Kim popular anymore? And I really wasn't in the group anymore, right? Because I just reacted a way that I did a different. And I didn't make the cheerleading squad, right? And I was the only one out of any history that made it in seventh grade and didn't make an A. So I got out of that situation. And I walked home because we would walk home every day about a mile. It's just what we did. And as I was walking, I remember I said to myself, I'm going to show her. I'm going to go out for basketball instead because, you know, and that's where this driven comes, that pivot.
Good.
One situation, yeah. Right? And so I looked back at that and I said, that's what's going on here. So actually what I did was in 2011, I decided to, it was around the time my daughter was, she was a junior or senior in high school. So it was earlier than that, but I decided to just quit my consulting for a while, like stop working for a while and spend time with my daughter, whatever that may be, because I realized she only had 2 years left and she was going to college. Right. And I just started, you know, helping out in her gymnastics and became an assistant coach just because, you know, volunteered, right? Mm-hmm. I would just be available. Right. It wasn't like I was getting in her space because in high school, you have to be careful about that, right? And it was just the best thing. It was like kind of a really like pivotal moment where I wasn't working, but it was such a good thing to take that pause, right? And just be with my daughter. How important that was. So important to be with her and just during that time. So glad I did that.
Right. Yeah. That's important to know that pivot. I'm glad that you see that because not many people see that. Very important. Very important. So tell us the power of the practicing the pause.
Yeah.
I love it. So tell us the power of it.
Yeah, so it's crazy when I say this, but I'm just gonna people go, whoa, really? So basically what I actually practiced a challenge in July, I said I wanted to encourage everyone to take 15 minutes a day and take a pause, unplug, and breathe for 15 minutes a day. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people did, I mean, I had about 350 people that participated, and they told me that they got more time back. That's the power. And they were able to spend time with themselves and discover who they are and how they are in the world. And also they started to get better relationships, started to hang out with their kids more and their spouses more and their friends more in person. Because, you know, it was the unplugging it's about pausing and putting that phone, just turning it upside down just for 15 minutes. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to have a smartphone. What I'm saying is just that act of setting it aside for a bit and just gaining your own power back and getting freedom.
Right. Yeah. Don't I know it. I don't give that up for nothing. I started the journey of unplugging 7 years ago. In the space of meditation, and even whatever I'm doing, if you're not bleeding, if you're not in the emergency room, even if you're in the emergency room, what can I do? I have to calm myself down. That's how I really conquer anxiety, because I call it the hustle. You know, the hamster wheel thing. We always got to move all the time, do stuff. You know, and for me, it was always I got to keep busy. But in the pause, as you say, the algorithms kind of change, right? In the pause, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right.
You start to allow things and experience things as they unfold. So I love that part. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. So audience, we are talking to Kim Groshek, and she's a multi-talented individual who wears many hats. Besides being an author, she is a loving mother, devoted wife, accomplished Ironman athlete, skilled artist, and a visionary entrepreneur. She's an experienced senior consultant and a second female entrepreneur with over 3 decades of corporate experiences. This is who we're talking today, and we are talking about the practice of the pause. So can you share with us, because I've been all through your book, you know, I got things going on. One of my favorite parts is the lesson on growth, and you did share in your own story some growth. Share what it means in the practice of the pause, the growth.
Well, there was a lot of growth that happened. I'm a computer scientist by trade, right? And I have ridden that wave and, you know, this creative and, you know, technical wave along with the machine out there, right? And the growth was actually taking a stance, right? Taking a stance and being separating myself from the machine and really taking, it's just gotten to be, you know, when I first started this, I was coming along and designing it. I was working on my PhD in 2007 and I had all my courses done again, driven, right? And I'm like, I was walking down Chicago, the streets of Chicago. And if you've been in Chicago during lunch hour, right? All the people come out to eat and we're all out on the sidewalks. And I'm walking on down the sidewalk. And at that time, the smartphones really were not many people had them. In fact, they had the flip phones or something back then, and not many, you know, it was just used for business. And this little boy about 8 years old was, you know, working on a Game Boy or something as he was walking. And now this is very normal. Everyone walks and looks into their phones, but back then, and so he's looking at his phone and runs into me. Right. And he looked at me, made a face and walked away without any, excuse me, pardon me. And I was raised to, you know, when I was sitting on the sofa, my parent, an adult will come, I'd get up, excuse me, and feel free to sit, right? That's just how I was trained. And this little boy, didn't even say anything to me. So, and at that moment, I was actually working on putting attitude in a computer for my PhD. It was a conceptual thing at the time. Now they have it.
Right, okay.
It was conceptual at the time. And I realized that, you know, I actually predicted that we would actually be driven by the phones and smartphones and technology, and I'm in it too. And so the growth for me, this is where this whole thing is that I switched my PhD. So I got to second master's and many of my colleagues came up to me and said, shame on you. Cause they knew I had the talent. Right. But I didn't have the urge or desire to explain, because it was so hard for me to, it was unethical for me to be creating this, knowing that that's not where I wanted the world to go. I wanted us to stay in the driver's seat, and I could see it switching. So in 2015, fast forward, I realized it was happening to me. I would get up and I'd be, you know, turn on the social media, and all of a sudden, oh my, 3 hours later, I'm still, what did I do, right? So I decided to just disconnect for 6 months from social media and the whole phone. Yeah. I put the infrastructure in place. I did not have a phone for a year to test it. It was like my little mini research project. And that's it was the stories around the growth and the seeing. The biggest thing is me seeing and the knowing of what other people are not seeing. Because like, I'll go to the restaurant and I'll bring my phone and flip it down though, because I want to be engaged with that person next to me and talk to them eye to eye, right? But then I see that family of six over here next door at the table and they're all looking at their phones, right? Oh, it just makes me really sad. So this is why.
Yeah, it is, and it's sad, it's sad.
So I created this 90-day challenge, by the way, where I'm in a movement where I'm talking to principals and all different layers, teachers, students, millennials, to see if they would be willing to participate in 90 days of practicing the pause for 15 minutes a day.
Oh, nice.
And so that you'll see that at the back of the book, where I'm just encouraging everyone just to practice it and see what happens to them. Mm-hmm. And just continue to apply it. And I see you doing it. Yeah. 7 years now, right? So there must be something there that you also are seeing.
Oh gosh. It's so freeing. I can't tell you that. It's just so freeing. I even get a place. I have a place now. I have my sitting chair where I read all my books and everything, where I read your book, and I sit there and I don't have to be thinking about anything. Just not thinking about anything. Just reading something, even staring out the window at the water, just anything, just to be aware, self-aware, you know, mindful of what's going on, because we're so busy, you know, we're so busy and we don't even see and appreciate the water, you know, that we're, if I'm living near water, I don't even appreciate that. You know, I don't appreciate the wind blowing, things like that. So it taught me to appreciate things and myself, you know, really did.
Yeah. You know, like I get up in the morning. So you I was going to say, I sit out on the deck. Uh-huh. I'll write and I hear the birds and it's like my little reserve out. Yeah. And I have no other, I don't have my devices. I'm writing. Right. And the birds sing, I actually, they inspire me to, you know, with new poetry or whatever I'm writing that day.
Yes. Right. Beautiful. You say in your book, we will keep shifting our viewpoints, pay attention to the inner guide, and welcome the softer trip. One untidy or uncertain, but wise and clear in the quiet place that the moment of pause creates. By using this, we've learned and the tools we've learned, you've learned and the tools you've given, you'd be better able to deal with life challenges. I just love that whole statement of we will keep shifting our viewpoints. I just love it. Can you share what you meant to the audience?
Yeah. So, you know, when you pause, you become more aware, you start seeing more color. So again, coming back to the birds, right, sitting outside, you know, you become more with nature, very similar to what you just said with the water, right? I think we are losing that, right? But so when we are out with nature, even just being walking or sitting, you get things come alive, colors are brighter, right? And that shifts. It's like you're sitting in that space, the space of beauty.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes us almost a few minutes to get into, to get settled, you know, when we're pausing.
Mm-hmm.
Shift happens organically.
Yeah. I like it because the pause doesn't need anything. Isn't that beautiful? It just doesn't need nothing. You don't need to write anything down. You don't.
You can if you want, but.
The whole thing, you don't need to advise. Yeah, but you don't need anything. You don't need to be practicing anything or doing anything. You just need to be. And I think that's what's missing in the world, is being, right?
Oh, yeah. It is. So big, you know, it's really, I keep saying this and kind of attributing it to, if you're sitting on the bus, right, the wheels on the bus go round and round when we were kids. And, you know, the device is actually taking over the driver's seat. Even cars right now don't have any steering wheels, kind of scary. And not everyone
thinks
it's great, but anyway, and it's really just moving that device to the back seat and just really taking control and having the freedom of making the choices, using our mind again, right? So you're right. I mean, it's like this whole pause is so simple. It's such a simple thing, and you can do it anywhere. And you can, if you find yourself in a stressful situation, just saying the word pause will remind you to stop, you know, and unplug and breathe, right? And just be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a beautiful thing. So, Kim, how can the audience, and I know that the audience is going to have your information, but how can they find you? And is there new things on the horizon for the practice of the pause, or maybe another episode or something?
Yeah. So there are three more books coming out. One is, and it's related to getting your time back. So when you, it's kind of a sequence, right? So when you pause and you get comfortable and pause, it's probably going to take several weeks to get comfortable in the quiet. But once we get there, we realize that time comes back, then it is to start becoming more aware of the time we're using and then putting structures I have used for years that have been very successful in place, and I can be available to do that with you, to support you. Then there's this other one that's a little bit more complex. It's related to, it's a framework that relates to, that you use, that helps you with different emotions. So for instance, there is a framework, and I call it pivot right now, but it's really about, I'm going to talk about agreements. So it'll help you be very, it's just a real simple concept. The other stuff is more complex. Yes. But typically agreements, a lot of times we're making agreement with ourselves. We'll say, hey, I'm going to get up in the morning and start walking at 8 o'clock. Do you agree, Kim? Well, Kim, did Kim agree because I get up at 8? Didn't I really go walking? No. So I'm not really agreeing, or maybe when I articulate it, I'm not agreeing. Or even agreeing with, you know, like with another person, you will agree and walk away, and someone doesn't do something, and then people are getting mad at each other. Well, maybe the agreement was never there or agreed on in the first place. So I talk a lot about that in my I have a framework that people can put in place to become more aware and practice that and articulate agreements. And then, you know, usually I've got many people, very close friends, that believe that a decision is a hard stone decision, but typically the goal is your hard stone date or your SMART goals, right? You're and that can shift too, but typically that's the harder thing and set in stone. Agreements change based, now this is where the shift comes in, right? This is what you asked, the shifting. A lot of times when you're trying to reach that goal, you discover things about yourself. You're pausing and you're uncovering things and seeing new things and you're shifting. Well, then you might have made an agreement and you need to re-agree with someone because you learned something new. So you have to have a conversation. And that's, again, articulating, making sure you come back to integrity, right? And have the conversation, have the new agreement, because it's okay if you change your mind. A lot of people think they can't. Yeah. So that's what that's what I talk about in the third book. So there's two more coming. Plus, there's a big book, the Kahuna book, that talks about the whole concept for the healing anxiety and anger and fear. And it talks about putting the framework in place to do that. So it's just amazing stuff.
Good. This all sounds really amazing. Audience, I hope you all reach out and get some of this information. I'm definitely going to get the kahuna of the book because I want to get it all. And once again, we're talking with Kim Groshek, who is the author of the Practice the Pause. So thank you so much for being here today. And we know that you're going to be doing great things. And we'll see you real soon, because maybe we need to practice the pause together. Thanks for being here, Kim.
Thank you for having me. Have a good day.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
We're reconsidering everything right now. What is time post-COVID? What is truth in Trump's America? Is You've Got Mail secretly a movie about a creepy gaslighting stalker? We can't answer the first two questions, but we have opinions about the third. We on Hot and Bothered are revisiting romance movies of the past and asking, what were these movies teaching us? What did we not even realize they were teaching us? Hot and Bothered is me, Vanessa Zoltan, a pop culture critic and nice lady with opinions, and Hannah McGregor, a bona fide professor of media studies, loving love stories, and also just a little bit concerned. Come listen to Hot and Bothered.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.